Hello and welcome to the first C2Y podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. My name is Wolfgang Vachon and I will be the host of these discussions. This podcast is for anyone interested in the field of child and youth care, be they parents, professionals, students, or young people themselves who care about the direction of this field. C2Y podcast comes out of a program called Connect to Youth, also known as C2Y. Connect to Youth started in 2005 as a way for people working in the youth social service system to learn directly from young people who have lived in that system. Over the past 7 years, C2Y has trained social workers, child and youth workers, therapists, students, parents, teachers, and many other professionals involved in child and youth care. We have done workshops in shelters, group homes, schools, and drop-in centers, among other locations. C2Y came out of a recognition that those who have direct experience in the system have a wealth of knowledge about that system. And those who work in the system are rarely trained by those from the system. To launch this first podcast, we decided to have a discussion with a couple of young people from Connect to Youth, as well as myself, the founder of C2Y. So, I'd like to start by asking the two of you to introduce yourselves and describe what C2Y does.
Hi, I'm Nadia, and I have been with C2Y for about 3 years. It's a great program where we go through intensive rehearsal and come up with scenarios and end up performing these scenarios in front of CYW students.
Great. Mo?
Hi, I'm Mo. We offer like a valuable insight because all the trainers have some kind of experience in the system, and so we go and we teach child and youth workers and social workers and anybody that kind of interacts with youth on just what's effective, what's not effective. If they have any questions, they can kind of bounce things off of us because we're the youth and we've been through it. It's just a really valuable learning tool.
So let's start with that. What, from your perspective, Mo, what is effective in working with young people?
First and foremost, I think, is getting the young person's feedback and asking them questions and asking them what they need. Oftentimes people assume that they just know what young people want and need, and most of the time that's not true. Sometimes I won't know what I want or need in that moment, but a lot of the times I do, and I don't get asked that a lot. And so I think that that's one of the most effective things in terms of treatment and working with a young person, is to really see where they're at and see what they need and if they have any suggestions with what will help them.
Nadia, what do you think is effective?
Workers that listen and seem to be in tune and are genuine and seem to really want to help the youth. That's definitely effective.
So both of you have talked about listening as the starting point, as a foundation for this work. Nadia, can you think of any experiences that you've had where you haven't felt listened to, and what was the impact?
There have been too many to name, there were times where I felt like I wasn't heard, and I felt like I wasn't valid, and that what I thought didn't matter, and it affects you, it really does.
Any thoughts? What happens, Mo, for you when you're not listened to?
Well, that just kind of reinstates the thought that I had about myself in the past, of that I'm not capable of understanding or being successful or making my own decisions. When I'm not listened to, when what I have to say is just kind of pushed to the side, it makes me believe that, yeah, you know what, I'm not capable. And it just makes me have a negative self-image of myself and what I think I can do. And then, when I, just thinking sort of down the road, if that's kind of the same negativity that I'd held on to, I wouldn't be where I am if I just kept believing that, I'm not capable of this just because so-and-so didn't listen to me. But it definitely, it definitely had an effect on me, because it was one of those things where I really had to go back and be okay, well, just because this worker didn't listen to me doesn't mean that I wasn't right, doesn't mean I didn't know what I was talking about, doesn't mean that I'm not capable. And so, like, I think just kind of preventing that whole work of having to, like, reprogram your thought process because of what someone said would be, like, extremely helpful and save a lot of time.
What motivated each of you to first become involved in Connect to Youth?
It seemed like a lot of fun. I liked the acting aspect. And it just seemed like something different. And the more rehearsals that we had and once we did our first few workshops, I was hooked. And then, like, I can't get enough of C2Y. I absolutely love this program.
And what is it about the first workshops that hooked you?
Just seeing how valuable having my voice be heard, you know, and feeling like these people were actually learning something and feeling like I could possibly be making a change in the youth that are coming up that are going to be going through the same experiences as I did. And if I can contribute to the way that a CYW looks at a youth, then I'm happy.
How would you like CYWs to look at youth?
I'd like them to see them as people and try and put themselves in their shoes. I mean, it's not easy, you know, growing up in a shelter, in a group home where you don't really have any guidance, right? Parental guidance. So you kind of look up to these people and you want to make them proud and you want to feel like you're somebody, and that's what matters.
You've been in shelters?
Many, many, many shelters.
Many, many, many shelters?
Many shelters.
What makes a good shelter?
Oh, that's a good question. a good cook. Flexible rules, not like super strict on, like, you know, if I'm 5 minutes late coming from a friend's house, it shouldn't be such a big deal. I mean, it's life. Shit happens. Lots of resources, like lots of knowledgeable staff that can help direct me to where I want to go, if I need housing, if I need a job, if I want to go back to school, if I need healthcare. Maybe a complaint process is good because, you know, if I don't agree with something that is being told to me, I'd like to be able to take it a step further and maybe talk to the supervisor or something like that. I think the rules should be reasonable. I mean, I've been to shelters where, you know, you can't shower during this and that time, and it makes no sense because, you know, when I'm dirty, I'm on a shower. Like, things like that. What else? Arts and crafts, for sure. And then outreach, people that come in from other centers that you know, reach out.
Nice. Mo, you haven't been in a shelter. Many of your experiences are in group homes and other systems.
Yeah.
What do you think makes a good group home?
Genuine staff. I think first and foremost, genuine staff, because when people are, like, placed in a group home or opt to live in a group home, like, it's supposed to resemble a home environment. And when you have staff that are stone cold or burnt out or not interested, it doesn't encapsulate that home environment. I think that, like, that for me, I found was, like, I was looking for that. Like, I wanted that home feel. I never had that home feel, which is why I moved to the group home. And to go there, and in some aspects I found it, but in some aspects I didn't, and I think that just, like, it all stems back to, like, who's working there. Like, I think also, like, you know, some of the rules could be a little less rigid, because, like, I understand, like, there's ministry guidelines and whatnot, but realistically, like, if you're living in a home, like, it's not, like, to the second, like, military run type of thing. Yeah, and I think that an option in, like, when you have a say in their treatment would have, like, would make a really good, I don't know what I'm saying right now, I'm just kind of rambling.
I'd like to pick up on that, the idea of youth having an option in their treatment, because in the field we often think that the best person to make those decisions are the professionals, people who've been trained. And what's your thought on that?
I don't think that's always true. Like, I remember, like, I was in a group home, and there was at one point where I was being forced into a treatment that I didn't want, that I knew wasn't going to work, and it hasn't worked, and I'm thankful I decided to not go, but there were so many risks that I had to take to stand up for myself for that and to actually, like, voice that I am not going to this. And nobody wanted to believe me. Everyone's like, no, you need this, you need this. I'm like, I don't need this. And, like, it was such a fight to have, like, to have my say. Like, it, like, I wish it would have been a lot easier to say, you know what, I don't think this is right for me, but maybe this other thing is. But it wasn't that. Like, it was decided as a team, and it was just, like, that was the decision, and I wasn't involved in that at all. I had to fight for that, and I think that if I had been listened to, and if other people are listened to, like, it makes their life a lot easier. Like, it makes the staff's lives a lot easier. They're not fighting the youth. The youth can feel like they have a part in their future. Like, it's just, it's a win-win situation.
We often talk about structure and the need for structure. Mm-hmm. And that structure is in place to support young people. And what I'm hearing from both of you is that structure can feel restrictive, detrimental, harmful to young people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I like structure. I think structure is a good thing, but I think, like sometimes it feels like it's, like, crushing youth. Like, there's so much structure to the point where they can't even grow. Like, if there's no room. It's just structure, structure, structure. I think there needs to be a balance between that, definitely.
So how do we find that balance, Nadia, between structure and, let me call it, agency, right? The ability of the young person to make their own choices.
By going to the youth and listening, you know, and finding out what it is that they need, what they want, and actually taking in what they're saying and considering putting it into their so-called structure.
I just want to add to that, and I think that, like when you're making, like, a plan for, like, the youth's future, like, include them. Have them there, like, have them a part of it, like that. So you still have that structure of having to create a treatment plan or whatever kind of plan, but they're also there and they have a say, so they don't feel like they're, like, being, like, crushed by it.
So I think what you're talking about around that tension between structure and agency is also, to a certain extent, something that youth workers feel. They have their pressures from organizations, from ministries, et cetera, about how they need to act. Let's talk about individual youth workers. What makes for a good youth worker?
I think someone who's transparent, who's just, like, open and honest and, you know, like, upfront about, like, this is what I have to work within and this is what I'll try to do within that. Like, I'll try to make things happen, but, like, just being very clear as to, like, what it is, rather than trying to be all, like, I don't know, like, I want to say it as professional, but that's not the right word. Like, just closed off, I guess, and just trying to maintain this, like, image of perfection when we all know, like, nobody's perfect. So I kind of like seeing that kind of quirkiness, you know, some of the mess ups, like, just different aspects of that person's personality. Just, you know, it makes me feel like, yeah, I can relate to you. You're a human being.
Being honest about when we do have those pressures.
Yeah.
How about you, Nadia? What do you think makes a good youth worker?
Someone that's flexible. I mean, what I can't stand is someone that goes by the book. I know the book is there, but, I mean, you don't always have to follow every single rule. Like, rules are made to be broken. That's how I see it, you know? And if I were a youth worker and, you know, the book says if someone doesn't call in for dinner, they're not allowed to have dinner, you know, I am going to bend that rule as much as I can because it makes no sense. And if there's extra food, sure, everyone can eat, you know, things of that sort, you know. Sure, you can have an extra bar of soap, things like that.
So have you had experiences where you've been told, no, you can't eat, no, you can't have soap?
Have I ever? Yes. I'm a smoker. I've smoked for 11 years now. Anyone that smokes knows that when you're stressed, you smoke more, you know. Being in a shelter is a stressful situation. And, you know, there was a time, I'm not trying to justify my smoking or saying it's a good thing, but, I mean, there was a time where it was, you know, the door for smoking locks at 10. And I couldn't sleep, and I wanted to go out for a cigarette. And staff's like, no, you know, the doors lock at 10. Meanwhile, she's going out for her smokes. And I'm like, this isn't fair. So, you know, I'm trying to negotiate with her, and I'm saying, well, what's going to happen if I don't listen to you and I go through that door? She's like, well, you can't come back in. You're going to be discharged. And it put me in a place where I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Either I'm going to stay up and rip my hair out, or I'm going to go out for my smoke and have nowhere to sleep for the night. And, you know, it's things like that that just drive me crazy.
When I was working in a shelter, we used to find large condoms in the morning, right? Inflated condoms. And we were thinking, what is this? And we realized it was people exhaling the smoke into condoms so that no one could smell the smoke.
The things we've done, we've blown smoke down the toilets, we've blown them into the fence, you know, like it's just crazy the things we got to do. You get pretty creative, though, when you're under such structure.
So what I'm hearing is that the structure is not preventing the acts, it's creating deceit, mm-hmm. is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
What keeps you guys coming back to Connect to Youth? You've been here for 3 years, Natty. You've been here for a couple of years, Mo. Mm-hmm. Why do you keep doing the program?
I have a lot to say. I have a lot to say about the, like, system and about, like, child youth workers and stuff like that. Not all of it's negative. And so I like coming back to C2Y because, like, people actually want to hear what I have to say. I wasn't able to, like, voice my opinions or suggestions when I was, like, living in the system. But now that I have the opportunity, since I've been out of it, to come back and to teach people about it, like, that's why I keep coming back. It's like, because I've had a lot of experiences in the system. I spent many, many years in there. And I've learned a lot of things that maybe, like, the staff or the youth worker or whatever won't see unless, like, someone comes and, like, tells them about it. So that's why, because I feel like I have a lot to share and people can learn from, like, my stories and my experiences. And it provides that platform for learning for me and for the youth workers. Because, like, every time when we go to Humber, like, I take back something different, too. Like, some of my, like, perceptions are changed or, like, whatever. So it's, like, it's learning on both ends for me, and that's why I keep coming back.
What do you think is the difference? You talk about Humber. You've also done workshops at other schools and with parents and mm-hmm. with teachers. What do you think the difference is when you're a young person in the system and people not listening to you, as opposed to when you come in as a trainer and people do listen to you? Why do you think they listen to you now and they didn't when you were involved in the system?
It's a whole, like, authority role. It's because when I'm in front of the classroom, like, you go into, like, this is the person I have to respect. But when someone's taking care of me, like, in some capacity, they're like, well, you have to listen to me. I don't have to listen to you. It's not my job to listen to you. I've been told that, like I don't have to listen to you. And I'm like, well, yeah, you should. And so it's, like, it's that whole, like, mindset shift of, like, who's in front of who's above who has, like, and personally, I wish it wasn't there. I wish, like, they would be listening and learning from, like, all aspects of it, but it's just the way it is at this point that, like, when you stand in front of a classroom or stand in front of an audience, people know that they have to listen to you. And it's funny because I've actually taught some of my workers that I've had, and it was really uncomfortable for them to sit there and to listen to me and watch me. And it was kind of rewarding for me too, actually. It was a neat experience.
Nice. Nadia, what keeps you coming back?
First off, I'd like to say of every project I've ever taken on in my whole entire life, C2Y is the one that I am the most dedicated to. I don't think I ever missed a day, and I wouldn't, you know. I absolutely love the program from every aspect. I love
I love interacting with these workers that are about to engage with youth. I like sharing my experiences. I like the acting aspect. I like feeling listened to. I like you and Carrie. You guys are awesome. I like the snacks you provide. Like, I love the people I work with. It's just such a great experience, and I'm so proud to be a part of C2Y. And when I tell, you know, my friends what I'm doing and how beneficial it is, it's just I'm so proud to be part of this. Not to mention the pay is really good.
That's important. Yeah. We work hard to be able to pay you guys.
Yeah.
Both of you have, you know, you spend a lot of time very involved in the system. Both of you are, dare I say, older now. And both of you have a bit of perspective. One of the things that we often don't have an opportunity as youth workers is to see where people end up, see where people go. I would like to hear each of you, what's going on in your lives now as you have some perspective on your transition out of being involved in the system? What are you guys doing?
I'm holding down a study job, which is something I never thought was possible before. I've been involved in other, like, acting scenarios, like, not scenarios, productions, that's the word. I've been involved in other acting productions, and I'm working on running a spoken word workshop for youth, so I have a whole bunch of things that are just kind of up and happening, and I'm in a lot better place. I'm happy now, like, I'm healthy and successful by my own definition, and things are just, they're just happening.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What's going on with you, Nadia?
For me, I'm holding down a job as well, which isn't easy. working full-time in the food industry, gotta make money. I'm also a mother. My son is 6. He's in grade 1, so that's a lot of work as well. I'm part of C2Y, obviously, and I'm part of a group called New Eyes, which we've developed an arts-based evaluation process for newcomers, finding out what works for them. It's kind of similar to C2Y. You know, we find out the barriers that they face and what they would like to see, and they get their voices heard, and there's arts involved in it. And I am, you know, just living life. I'm still very unstable. I moved 8 times in the past year, but through my experience with Connect to Youth, I learned that I have a lot of resiliency, and I am able to bounce back and just keep going, and I keep a positive outlook and look forward for the years to come.
Yeah. And both of you do arts. Just last week, Nadia, you shared a new track that you had sung, and
yeah.
And Mo, you talked about doing a spoken word workshop that you're going to start doing with young people, mm-hmm. And you do spoken word yourself.
Yes.
Often in one of the workshops that we do, you have a spoken word piece that you do, and you've willingly agreed to do that spoken word piece for us today.
Yes.
Could we hear that?
Absolutely. So this piece is called Freedom. I am free. Free to walk, free to run, free to play. I am free. Free to stop, free to think, free to say exactly what is on my mind. But unlike in the civilized states, other places kill when people express the flaws that they find. Now imagine being a child in an effed up world like this, where even in the comfort of home, it is hard to find bliss. Chaos surrounds me. Daddy's lying, mommy's crying, sister's beating, and brother's not eating. The belt comes out and glass starts to shatter. Now everything's destroyed as if nothing matters, and I'm on the floor, bloody and bruised, confused as to why I was used. I wish I was in a safer place without feeling the presence of someone on top of my back invading my private space. As an 8-year-old trying to break free, I scream. But after milking me for all I've got, I am worthless, they deem. The truth is, my innocence was stolen, my trust broken, my sense of self vanished. Life is over, it seemed. I cannot stay. I must get out, even if I have to punch, kick, and shout. So I gathered my belongings and saved what was left of me. Off into the world I went and found refuge behind a tree. A tree with many leaves, each containing a face, that often reassured me that this is a safe space. How could this be? Seeking comfort as someone sat beside me, I reached for new life while dropping the knife and resolving the strife within me, untying the ropes that left me hanging by a thread, conquering the issues that left me wishing I was dead, soaring to new heights, discovering the passion within me, with open eyes seeing there's more to life than pain, passionate eyes seeing the passionate spirit reign into passionate hearts, teaching lives there's more to gain because I have found freedom from my pain. From the depths of my heart, I can never be apart from what completes me. Credit doesn't go to those who stood beside. Credit goes to those who chose and rose against the tide to believe in people like me, hope for people like me, pray for people like me. I'm alive today because someone saw something that I can be, and because of that vision, I am free. Thank you.
Thank you.
It gives me goosebumps every time.
It's beautiful, Mo. Thank you very much. And thank you both for sharing the passion that you have and the wisdom. And I hope everyone who hears this podcast can learn about what happens when we foster that passion in young people and allow their agency and allow their voice forward. Thank you for both for joining us.
Thank you, Wolfgang.
Thanks, Wolfgang.